Let's talk a little bit about accessibility. I know that there have been a couple of big pro bono conferences up in Anchorage recently. And do you think for average Alaskans, they have a clear route into the legal system? I mean, in Sitka, quite a few of the criminal cases, they go right to the public defender. And then you have people like maybe a large commercial fishing operation that might be charged with a violation that brings in some of the top legal representation in the state. What's that middle territory like for average folk in terms of accessibility?
I think it's difficult. The problem is that the average case, if you're going to heavily litigate a case, can cost, you know, even in a divorce or a personal injury case or any of those types of cases, you can end up with a $10,000, $20,000 attorney fee bill. How many people have that money to put down? They don't. You know, people in the middle class, even the upper middle class, they don't have $10,000 to throw away. It's a very large sum of money, and people may be able to earn that over time. But lawyers don't want to rely on payments in the future. They know that that might be all you ever get as a retainer. What we have done to address that need is to try to encourage people to do attorneys to do unbundled legal services. Which would be, you know, you do a part of a case, or you draft motions, or you're there to, consult with the pro bono litigant. They'll come back and tell you what's going on. Maybe you're going to sit in the back of the courtroom and listen to what's going on and then advise. They can come back and talk to you. As a lawyer in any case, you cannot speak for that person, the person who's the case is all about, unless you enter an appearance. And once you enter an appearance, you might be obligated to stay throughout the case. So lawyers are sitting there saying, well, I don't want to do that. If I'm going to do that, you're going to have to pay quite a bit of money. So we are doing what we can. But you're right. I mean, that is the most difficult thing, right in the middle. What can we do to help those people have lawyers? And, you know, I think the general consensus is that when someone's going into court, it is a very, very difficult thing. It is a very emotional thing, and it's not something they should have to sit there and deal with their emotions while trying to put on their best face. It's almost impossible. I couldn't imagine doing it. And I do this all the time, you know, but if it were about me, I'd need someone else there. So we're trying to encourage that. And we're trying to facilitate people having as much help as they can during some of the most difficult times in their lives.
So it sounds like you're saying the look of a typical pro bono case or a pro bono client is changing a little bit from when you started your practice, say.
Well, I mean, I think it's changing from when I started my practice, but it changes as our economy changes. As people have less money, there's a greater need for pro bono and low-cost legal services. In times of plenty, not so much. But then again, is there going to be less of a need for lawyers when things are good? So it's, it's a vicious cycle. When times are their worst and people have the least amount of money, there's the greatest need for lawyers, from bankruptcy to divorce to criminal. Fortunately, if you're in the criminal context, Alaska has an excellent system for providing representation for those people. I think everybody who is worried that we are convicting the innocent can rest assured that we're doing the best we can to make sure that doesn't happen.
What's the Alaska Bar Association's position on the whole evolution of mediation as a way to resolve disputes sort of outside the traditional legal system?
Mm-hmm. We encourage it. If it can be done without two lawyers on the opposing side, that's great. We want to see the cases that can settle. I think for those of us that are practicing lawyers, I mean, there are plenty of people who go to law school, but a lot of them do not practice. But those who are practicing, I think we really want what's best for the people that fall into the system. And the fact is that if these people who are fighting against each other can agree on just one thing, that's a good thing for their future, especially if you're dealing with children and everything else. So we encourage it. The reality is that I think people always thought mediation would take business away from lawyers. Arbitration would do the same. It never happened that way. It was the opposite. It was more business for lawyers. Or people said, hey, arbitration costs a lot of money. Maybe that's not the right way. And mediation can cost money. It's another avenue to make things work. And it also falls into exactly that concern you have is where's the middle person fit in? The middle person can afford mediation. And they can work out what they can and then maybe even reduce what a private attorney will have to charge. So we encourage it. We want more people to feel they have access to the system. And we don't want people going into the system who are just fighting it out without any regard to trying to work together to cooperate or anything like that. And mediation is a great tool for that.
Because mediation falls outside the court structure, does it create an opportunity outside the legal structure for manipulation to occur that may not happen, you know, under the supervision of a judge?
There's the potential. You can't say that there haven't been those people that come out of mediation saying that mediator wasn't on my side. On the other hand, it's a completely voluntary process. So if an individual is feeling that they're being treated unfairly, the process can end whenever they wish. So, and that's the difference, I think, between the court system and what lawyers are faced with and mediation, is that it's always at the control of either one of the parties. Anyone can say anything. Meanwhile, if you're in court, you know, you may want something to happen, but no matter what you do or how hard you scream, it's not going to change. So there is the potential, but there are all, because it's a different system and a lot more controlled by the parties, I think there are a lot more safeguards in it because of the power the parties have in mediation.
Where else are you going on this trip, and what are you hoping to accomplish?
I'm also going to Ketchikan. And the goal here, the Bar Association, Alaska is unique in a lot of respects in that you can't drive to most of the major cities. I mean, you could drive between Fairbanks and Anchorage, but that's about it. The rest you have to fly to. And the state's not about Anchorage or Fairbanks. It's about all of our communities, Juneau, Sitka, Ketchikan, Bethel, Nome, Kotzebue, and all the little villages in between. And so what the Bar Association tries to do is we try to reach out to all of our members. There are about 25 attorneys here in Sitka. How many in Ketchikan? About 30 in Ketchikan. There's about 200 in Fairbanks. There's, you know, 10 or 15 in Nome. We try to reach out to all those communities, see how the bar can better serve them, and also get feedback from community members from around the state. This way we know we are meeting the needs of every area.
Is this going to be an annual thing for you, or is this just kind of a honeymoon swing through the big communities of Alaska?
This is just one time. You get to go. I'm trying to get the trips in at the beginning of my term. This way I can apply what I've learned and bring it to the attention of the board and the members of the bar. And then my successor, who will take the presidency, Don McClintock, he'll take over in May of this coming year, in 2011. He can go and either follow along with what I've started or go on his own path with the information I've provided and other prior presidents have provided.
All right. Well, I appreciate your taking the time to come in and chat with us about the Alaska Bar Association.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having us.